This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
I'm here today with Commander David Tarantino, a medical doctor in the U.S. Navy, who's had extensive experience in the last several years with respect to the health sector in Iraq, among other situations around the world as a professional military medical expert. We're now approaching this spring the 6th anniversary of the U.S. engagement in the war in Iraq. David, this offers us a very good opportunity, I think, to reflect on what has or has not been achieved and what has been the experience of the U.S. government's engagement, with special reference to the health sector, medical services, status of public health of population in Iraq over the course of this 6 years, and looking forward. You've had rather remarkable opportunity and direct personal hands-on engagement at different moments in the preparation and lead-up to the war and in the course of the war, and thank you so much for being with us today to share some of your insights and experiences on this. I want us to begin and sort of walk through this in a sequence. I'd like to begin before the war. What kind of preparation, consultations, analyses took place prior to the March 03 invasion in Iraq to lay down the strategy and guidance on the possibilities of dislocation of medical services and dislocation of basic humanitarian requirements in Iraq? Let's start with that, and then we'll move our way forward.
All right, thank you. First, I want to thank you for having me here today. And that's a great question. In the lead-up to the Iraq war, a significant amount of preparations were made for the immediate emergency relief phase of any military action in Iraq, and including on the health side. The U.S. government established a humanitarian planning team, of which I was a part, and it was an interagency team with multiple agencies. And we traveled through Central Command and to the region and met with a number of stakeholders to get inputs about potential humanitarian consequences and then devise means to prevent or mitigate those consequences. And that involved multiple trips, multiple sessions of outreach, as well as direct involvement in the campaign planning to include those factors in the campaign plan as best to avoid or prevent mass displacements, mass disruption of civil institutions such as water supply, food supply, sanitation, health. And it also included significant stockpiling of relief supplies that could be brought in emergency phase, as well as the establishment of coordination mechanisms such as a humanitarian operations center in Kuwait, and extensive consultations about the at least temporary continuation of the Oil for Food program, which was actually the Oil for Food and Medicine program, as it brought in essentially all of the Iraq health system supplies and consumables and pharmaceuticals. So it was critical to address that as well. And that portion of it, the immediate emergency relief phase, was planned to begin immediately on the heels of the advancing forces. And in most regards, it did, and a significant U.S. government interagency presence was able to come in with USAID and other agencies, as well as military civil affairs. And to a large extent, a lot of the adverse humanitarian consequences and catastrophes that many had predicted were avoided through these preparations.
When you talk a little bit more specifically, what were the concrete contingencies, the worst-case scenarios that you were thinking might happen, that you were preparing for, that actually did not happen, and why did they not happen?
Well, on the health side, people were concerned about disease outbreaks, epidemics. Cholera is endemic in Iraq, and there's always a certain level of that there, as well as other diarrheal illnesses. And that was prevented through aggressive preventive measures of water, sanitation, and bringing the health system back onto its feet as quickly as possible, getting health workers back on the job as quickly as possible, bringing in stockpiled emergency relief supplies such as WHO kits that could provide services for 10,000 people for a number of months. Other concerns were massive population displacements, and that was specifically addressed in the campaign planning and the way the operation was conducted to try to avoid the disruption of large population, to bypass large population centers, to avoid mass displacements. Other issues were the complete disruption of the Oil for Food program, which provided food and nutrition and medical supplies to the entire populace of Iraq, and the planning and preparation in advance allowed that to continue apace. So a number of pretty dramatic consequences were avoided.
Thank you very much, David. I neglected to mention at the outset that David is a fellow at CSIS for the month of February, is a visiting fellow with us. David, let's now enter the period. The war has begun. We're looking at the health sector. What were the, in the first phase of the war, in the first couple of years of the war, what were the major inflection points, the major developments that had high impact, positively or negatively, on the health infrastructure and the delivery of services?
That's a good question. I was earlier discussing the immediate emergency relief phase, which then was meant to transition to a stabilization and reconstruction phase. Now, as has been widely reported, there was some lack of clarity about what that structure would look like and how that would be organized, some of it dependent on the facts on the ground as they unfolded. Originally, there was the Office of Reconstruction and Humanitarian Assistance with General Garner, which had a health team that aimed to just start putting the health sector back together and bringing it back to work. And then there was the massive investment through the Coalition Provisional Authority under Ambassador Bremer, had a very large Ministry of Health advisory team, up to 30 people at times, who were working with Iraqi counterparts to reinvigorate, to reestablish the national health system. A lot of money was invested early on through the supplemental and through some of the Iraqi funds, and a lot of effort was made on strategic planning, coordination among stakeholders. But one of the early setbacks was the looting that came after the fall of Baghdad, or with the fall of Baghdad. And that was a big setback to a health system that was already quite degraded, had degraded under Saddam and under the sanctions, and because some of the hospital facilities, clinics, warehouses were targets of the looting. The next major setback was the UN bombing, which came right on the heels of pretty successful discussions amongst all health sector stakeholders, international organizations, and others about sort of a strategic way ahead. But then with the UN bombing, the international organizations withdrew, a lot of non-governmental organizations withdrew, and it made it harder to have that comprehensive, holistic, collaborative approach to health in Iraq. The next phase was the transition from the CPA to the U.S. Embassy and the establishment of Iraqi sovereignty. The Ministry of Health was the first ministry to be recognized as fully autonomous based on the progress it had made in comparison to other ministries. But with the transition to the embassy and the drawdown of the CPA, the U.S. health sector team drew down to a very small number to oversee still considerable investments in the health system, which made that challenge more difficult. And then early on, there was a lot of optimism. A lot of projects were in place. Programs were in place. Minister Alwan had come in on the Iraqi side, who is an outstanding leader. However, with the next shuffling of the Iraqi government, the next iteration of the Iraqi government, a lot of ministries were parceled out based on sectarian or political influence. And Muqtada al-Sadr's faction got control of the Ministry of Health, which proved to be a significant setback as they replaced skilled technocrats with some of their people. They brought sectarian influence into the operations of the ministry, and that was a period of regression.
Thank you. Just a point of clarification before we move to the next question. So hospitals, clinics were targeted during the looting, and this was a severe setback. In other words, it wasn't just that you had commodities removed, but you had buildings destroyed, you had electrical systems destroyed, you had much of the infrastructure. The other question is, in the $18 billion, the first $18 billion supplemental for reconstruction, could you tell us how much of money was set aside within that for the health reconstruction piece.
Yes, to your first point, the looting had a significant impact on the health system. A number of hospitals and clinics were targets of the looting, and it wasn't just carting off a few supplies. It got down to the wiring and the infrastructure of some of the buildings. In fact, the Ministry of Health headquarters was completely looted and burnt and essentially destroyed and had to be completely rebuilt. In terms of the U.S. supplemental, it was approximately $18.5 billion in total. Of that, close to $1 billion was dedicated to the Ministry of Health and health programs and projects.
What kind of U.S. expert personnel presence was there in our embassy in Baghdad to manage that nearly $1 billion commitment?
Well, originally under CPA, there was a team that was at times up to 30 people, which included the senior advisor for health was Mr. Jim Haveman, the administrator of health for the state of Michigan. And he had a team that included military personnel from each branch of the service, but also public health service and internationals on that team. With the transition to the embassy, it really dialed down to essentially one health attaché, as well as some of the other expertise in some of the contracting issues who were overseeing some of the health program contracts and some of the others in the embassy. But it was a much smaller team under the U.S. embassy after the transition.
Now, let's skip ahead towards where we are today. And two questions. One is, what kind of analyses has been undertaken? I know you've been directly involved in doing some analyses. You're aware of many of the other more recent analytic work that's come forward that's looked at the overall kind of experience in reconstruction and put a special focus, or at least taken the time to talk about the health sector. What's that story that's being told today? Where are we today in Iraq, where some of the more disturbing developments have been replaced by more promising developments? Sadr is not in control of the health ministry anymore. And then looking forward, what are the key challenges and opportunities today be guiding U.S. efforts and others in Iraq in this next couple of years?
Okay. Well, I'll start by addressing the lessons learned issue, if you will. And two reports address that pretty well. Just very recently released was the Hard Lessons Report from the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, and we can reference that. We can link that on our website. Also, I oversaw a Iraq health sector-focused after-action review a year and a half ago, and that report we can reference online, link online as well. Some of the big-picture findings from those are, first of all, that security and health are interrelated. You really can't have one without the other, but security is of primal importance to establishing health and to doing health sector stabilization and reconstruction. Another critical lesson learned is that the level of effort, you get out what you get in, and so you have to have a very significant level of effort focused on the health sector, and that has to be very closely coordinated amongst all the actors and the stakeholders, and you have to have the right people there at the right time, and that includes the international community as well as the whole of U.S. government across Department of Defense, USAID, Health and Human Services, Department of State, all have to be moving in the same direction on health issues. We were able to identify some key predictors or sort of macro variables in health sector reconstruction. And a lot of these are out of control of the people who are actually working on health. They're bigger than that, but they're critical. First, again, is security. That's got to be the sine qua non. Then second is level of commitment, which we talked about, coordination of all parties. The host nation absorptive capacity, it's the ability, the managerial capacity, the human resources capacity of a host nation to absorb massive stabilization and reconstruction efforts in the health sector. The pre-existing condition of the host nation, and you can compare and contrast Afghanistan and Iraq to get a sense of that, whereas Iraq had a relatively solid foundation to build upon. It had deteriorated over the past couple decades, but they had at least some some pre-existing framework to build upon. And then another critically important factor is the politicization of the health sector, whereas positive politicization is accountability, lack of corruption, adequate funding, a national priority, whereas negative politicization is sectarianism, cronyism, displacing technocrats for political favors, and et cetera.
If you could say just a few more words about the translation of this experience into other settings, and I have in mind here Afghanistan. I mean, we do have the prospect in front of us today of an expanded U.S. engagement there. Could involve an expanded engagement in support of basic health services with a focus on trying to reduce child and maternal mortality, bring under control some of the endemic infectious diseases and the like. Would you expect that the translation of the experiences out of Iraq are going to lead into specific type of strategies? I realize I'm asking you to sort of think speculatively into the future, but what would you project?
Well, I think that from everything you see and hear and read, that there's going to be a concerted focus, a rethink, a relook at the Afghanistan strategy writ large, and I think the health sector has to be a big part of that. And again, it gets back to the interplay of health and security. They're interrelated, and you have to address them both. And hopefully that will be a significant part of the new strategy. And then applying some of the key principles that we've seen in Iraq, first of all, as just mentioned, security is critical, and health is part of that. And health has to be a central part of stabilization and reconstruction. It takes a significant, dedicated level of effort, and that's people as well as financial resources. It takes coordination amongst U.S. government actors, DOD, HHS, USAID, state. It requires a concerted whole-of-government approach. It requires a capacity-building, sustainability-focused approach where we're building the host nation, Afghan capacity. And we have to get the right people in there at the right time, people with the cultural competence and the public health expertise and the health systems expertise. So hopefully we will learn some of the hard lessons, or at least apply some of the hard lessons of Iraq to Afghanistan.
David, can you give us some closing comments? Looking forward in Iraq, what are likely to be the priorities in the health sector? What are likely to be the continued key challenges that we're going to need to overcome in order to see the kind of results that we're looking for in terms of health impacts with among the Iraqi population?
Well, that's a good question, because right now there's room for cautious optimism in Iraq regarding the health system. The U.S. government recently partnered with Iraqi counterparts to conduct the Iraq Health Symposium, and that the proceedings of that are also online through our website. And one of the great things that came out of that was the introduction of the new Iraqi Minister of Health, Minister Hasnawi, who's a very respected and responsible figure who's there now after the era of Muqtada al-Sadr. And so that's enlightened leadership is critical, and that seems to be in place now. Hopefully there will be some stability in that with upcoming elections, or at least the politicization aspect of the leadership will be removed and the sectarian aspect will be continue to be removed. Security is essential. The security gains now are creating the space for health sector gains. And the return of the reversal of the brain drain of the Iraqi health professionals, the exodus of health professionals due to prior security concerns has been a huge setback. But there are signs that that's reversing, with some Iraqi health professionals returning, and the government has made that a priority. And funding, the Iraqi budget has increased, and they have significant oil revenues, and they're devoting a significant portion to their health sector. And then the transition from U.S. and international and management and conduct of programs and projects, turning those over to the Iraqi leadership, to the Iraqi Ministry of Health, and completing the turnover of the capacity building and the sustainability, and then providing more technical assistance, and then into more of partnering and mutual exchanges of professional and medical and health expertise are on the horizon.
Thank you very much, David. That was a terrifically rich presentation, and we're very grateful. You made reference at a few points that the reference documents will be posted on the CSIS website. That is www.csis.org. That's the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. Thank you, David.
This has been a CSIS Global Health Policy Center podcast at www.smartglobalhealth.org.